It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Iowan Norman Borlaug, who grew up in Cresco, was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 1970, this for a lifetime of work to feed the world's hungry. Borlaug also founded the World Food Prize. That's the foremost international honor, recognizing the achievements of individuals who have improved the quality, quantity, or availability of food in our world. The winner of this year's World Food Prize is heralded as Africa's Norman Borlaug. His name is Akinwumi Adesina. He's spearheaded major agricultural policies in Nigeria, pushing to change the way that country distributes fertilizer, also challenging the country to modernize its agricultural practices. And in doing so, he's helped to expand Nigerian food production enormously and has helped attract billions of dollars in private sector investments in agriculture. He joins me now for this half hour of River to River. Akinwumi Adesina, president of the African Development Bank, welcome to our program and congratulations on this great honor.
Thank you very much, Ben. It's great to be with you on the program today.
Let me start by having you, before we talk about the work that you've done, to describe a little bit of your homeland, Nigeria, more than six times the size of Iowa, the most populous country in Africa, 160 million people approximately. I didn't know this before reading about it for this interview. One in seven Africans is Nigerian. Tell us a little bit about your homeland and its suitability for agriculture.
Well, you know, Nigeria actually used to be one of the largest producers of agricultural crops in the world. You know, we used to dominate oil palm production in the world in the 60s. We used to dominate cotton production in the 60s. We dominated world cocoa production in the 60s. And so actually Nigeria is known today for a lot of oil. But actually in the 60s, Nigeria was actually known for its for the high productivity of its agriculture. So we left that and we found the black gold. And now we have to return back to the green gold. And that is what all of the work about agriculture is about. It's how to really diversify the economy. You know, Nigeria, as with many African countries, is so much blessed. You know, I think God really loves Africa. You know, God has given Africa, you know, a tremendous amount of sunshine. We've got sunshine all the time. We've got lots of water. We've got lots of cheap labor. And so we just got to make sure we produce food and become a global powerhouse in food and agriculture. So that's what all of my work has been about. I really believe that Africa must be a global powerhouse in food and agriculture.
Mm-hmm. So give us some facets of how you've been working on modernizing agriculture in Nigeria. When did you start? When did your interest in this start?
Well, actually, it started way back. You know, I must say to you, I really wasn't planning, you know, at least as far as my dad was concerned, I wasn't planning to be in agriculture. You know, my dad desperately wanted me to be a medical doctor, like, you know, folks during that time. But I went into agriculture because, you know, that was what university would take me for. And then, of course, I got my passion in agriculture, you know, way back in the 1970s. I went on and did my PhD here in the United States, a master's and PhD at Purdue University. And when I was here in the university, here at Purdue University, I saw this tremendous potential of U.S. agriculture. I got fascinated by the productivity of U.S. farmers. And so, you know, I was determined then that I had to really do something to help Africa to really unlock its full potential in agriculture. So I went right back to Africa. I started working in many international agricultural research centers. And most importantly, you know, for me was I worked at Rockefeller Foundation in the late 1990s, and I helped to develop a whole network of what you can call them mom-and-pop shops that sell seeds and fertilizers all across rural areas. And today they provide seed and fertilizers for literally, you know, tens of millions of farmers all across Africa. And then, you know, I went on to create with Bill and Melinda Gates what is called the Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa, which is a big NGO that was fully dedicated to accelerating agricultural productivity and production in Africa. I was the vice president there. And then while I was there, I worked to help to mobilize billions of dollars from commercial banks in Africa towards the agricultural sector. And of course, then I got appointed to be Minister of Agriculture in Nigeria, which would be the equivalent here of the Secretary of Agriculture. And while I was there in Nigeria, you know, I felt that Nigeria needed to take agriculture as a business. I felt that farmers needed to get access to seeds and fertilizers very fast. And so I helped to develop a system that is called the electronic wallet system. What that is, basically, is to allow farmers to use their mobile phones to get access to seeds and fertilizers via vouchers. And we were the first in the world to try that system. And we reached more than 15 million farmers over a period of 4 years. And that allowed Nigeria to, you know, significantly increase its food production by more than 21 million metric tons of food. And today, that same model is being used all, you know, in many parts of the world, including Afghanistan, and also in about 30 African countries to which we are trying to scale it up from the African Development Bank. That's my background. That's my passion.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that last point, using the cell phones. To revolutionize agriculture in Nigeria. How does that work? Let's say I am a farmer in Nigeria or in Iowa, wherever. How does it work?
Well, you know, you see, it's easier to find, pop soda in any part of, you know, Africa. Rural areas, you will find them over there. But it's very hard for farmers to find seeds and fertilizers. And so when I became minister in Nigeria, I asked myself the question, why is it so much easier to find seeds, pop soda in the rural areas and not find seeds and fertilizers? Well, the point is that the private sector has not been supported for years to develop that, actually, inside of the rural areas. So the first thing that I did was I said, well, look, Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola, if they can find their way to a farmer's house and get it to drink pop soda, why can't I find seeds and fertilizer companies to develop their value chains to reach the same farmers? And so that's exactly what I did. So I took government out of the way, and I opened the space completely to the private sector. And then with a mobile phone, you see, Africa today has 700 million people with mobile phones. And so you can just imagine that. So the most powerful tool in the hand of a farmer in Africa today is a mobile phone. So what I did then was to say, all right, let's register all of our farmers, give them all the access to their information on mobile phones, and then send them vouchers, basically subsidized vouchers to buy seeds and fertilizers over their mobile phones. So we send that to them, the farmers will get it, they will go to the input shop, and then they will actually use the same voucher on their mobile phone to buy the seeds and fertilizers. And it just started a revolution all across the whole country. It brought back probity, transparency, and accountability into how you use public policies to reach the poor. And so that is the power of that technology. That, you know, and one of the things that I'm most excited about was that it helped to reach 2.5 million women farmers with improved seeds and fertilizers. These are folks that will never have thought about getting access to subsidized farm inputs in Africa anyway. And in and so, as one of them told me, he said, well, thank God for this technology. Now men can't cheat us anymore.
My guest, if you've just joined us, is Akinwumi Adesina. He is the president of the African Development Bank, also the 2017 World Food Prize laureate. My guest for this half hour of River to River. Tell us a little bit about agriculture in Nigeria, your homeland, before these sort of reforms, these revolutionary reforms were instituted. You talked about the discovery of oil in Nigeria, sort of, I guess, putting agriculture on the back burner or letting it not thrive as much as it could. You've talked about corruption in agriculture. What did you face when you wanted to institute reforms and there was corruption? Where did it come from?
Well, you know, what had happened was, you know, the government over years was the one that would basically buy seeds and fertilizers through a public procurement system. But when I became minister, I found that system was just a real highly corrupt system. It was a rent-seeking system. I found that at not more than 11% of the seeds and fertilizers bought and sold by government ever go to the farmers. And you can understand why. You know, people have been doing this for decades, making money off the back of poor farmers. And so what I did was I said to myself that if we could not break the back of the cartel that had been holding the farmers down for decades, there was no way I was going to succeed as Minister of Agriculture. So I made the decision, and it was a very risky one, I can tell you, Ben, you know, that we had to end this corruption of, you know, really 40 years in the seed and fertilizer industry. And so I walked up to the president. I said, Mr. President, we've got to end this corruption. And, you know, believe me, it took us 90 days to end the corruption of 40 years in seeds and fertilizer procurement by government in Nigeria. And what we did essentially was I stopped immediately government ever buying and selling seeds and fertilizers in Nigeria. Take a look at the United States. You will not even think about it. The government doesn't buy or sell seeds or fertilizers. You've got all kind of companies doing that, and that's the way it's supposed to be. And so I told all the seed and fertilizer companies, well, look, guys, you know, government is not the farmer. The farmers are out there in the rural areas. Develop your supply chains to reach the farmers and don't supply your seeds and fertilizers to government, which was the source of the corruption in the first place. And so that was what we had to do. And I can tell you, it was very, very risky, very risky. I used to tell the president of the country at the time that this is such a tough work. We were going to be not just stepping on people's toes, we were going to be walking on people's heads. And well, thank God I'm alive to tell the story of it.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about the pushback. I would imagine if you have corruption that's ingrained in society, in agricultural practices in Nigeria for decades, there are people getting rich off of this. Weren't there threats of violence and so forth? The vested interests did not want it to change, did they?
Well, of course, the best day interest didn't want it to change. But what also happened is that, you know, once you put in place a transparent system, that even the folks, same folks that were actually doing the bad stuff realized they could make more money through a more transparent system than a rent-seeking system. And that was what happened. And I must say that, you know, it really changed everything. For example, if you take the situation with the banking industry in Nigeria, you know, less than, let me say, 0.7% of the total bank lending in the country was going to the agriculture sector when I became minister. And once we opened up the sector to the private sector, you know, that share of lending went from 0.57% to more than 5% of the total bank lending in the country going to the agricultural sector. So basically, everybody began to see agriculture not as a way of life, not as a development activity, but began to see agriculture as a real thriving business that had to be run in a very, very transparent and competitive manner. And I think, you know, I mean, well, you got to take risk in life, and I took mine, and I'm glad that it benefited the farmers. It was a risk worth taking.
If you just joined us, Akinwumi Adesina is my guest. He's the 2017 World Food Prize laureate. He's now in Iowa to celebrate that honor. Also president of the African Development Bank, being honored for all of the things he's done to revolutionize agricultural policies in Nigeria, his homeland, pushing to change the way the country distributes fertilizer, and challenging the country to modernize its agricultural practices. Let's talk a little bit about malnutrition. I understand last year you were appointed to work with a UN group to fight malnutrition in all its forms worldwide. Tell us about malnutrition in Africa, perhaps Nigeria, and worldwide, and the work you're doing there.
You know, malnutrition is a global problem. It's a silent killer of opportunities for folks, and people just don't realize that. If you look at the situation with minority children in the world, you know, we have right now, you know, way over 160 million kids that are malnourished, especially stunted, I mean, you know, and that basically means they are too short, you know, for their age. You know, the same way in which somebody is short for their age is exactly how their, you know, neurological development actually is, which means that they do not have the right cognitive ability to be able to perform well in schools. And so, you know, Africa today has about 58 million children that are stunted, that is too short for their age, and therefore that incapacitates them for the rest of their lives. And for me, as president of the African Development Bank, you know, we invest a lot in infrastructure, power, water, roads, and stuff like that, and those are all great infrastructure to invest in. But I believe that the most important infrastructure is the brain infrastructure. It's what I call the gray matter infrastructure, because, you know, stunted children today are going to lead to stunted economies tomorrow. And the cost of stunting to Africa is immense. If you take a look at it, it costs Africa more than $25 billion a year. And in terms of GDP loss, it is actually more than about 11% of GDP loss because of that. So it makes absolutely every sense for us to invest in the future of our children by making sure they are well fed, they can go to school, they can stay in school, they can perform. And that is why I have taken up the big global agenda to help to eliminate malnutrition and stunting, in particular among children in Africa. It's all about economics, actually, if you take a look at it, you know, because, you know, if you have kids that go to school, stay in school, perform well in school, in future, you know, you have labor productivity will rise, incomes will rise, and the economics will thrive. And so it makes a lot of sense. So myself, Bill Gates, you know, the former Secretary General of United Nations, Kofi Annan, and a few African presidents got together and created what they call the African Leaders for Nutrition. Our goal is to eliminate malnutrition in Africa and to make sure our kids get access to the foods that they need. And not just also the kids themselves, but also you take a look at their mothers as well. You know, we know that, you know, so many mothers die for no reason in Africa, as the rest of the world, just for lack of access to basic vitamins, for iron, for zinc, and folic acid. And these things are easy to get. And so we are determined that we must improve the access of women to all the things they need so they can be well-fed, they can breastfeed, feed their kids, and make sure they have the immune systems necessary for them to live a very viable and productive life.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
what are the biggest obstacles standing in the way of that, then? If you say it's all about economics, what are the economic obstacles?
Well, you know, part of it is that people don't even realize the economic dimension of it. You know, people have always treated, you know, malnutrition in Africa, you know, as in other parts of the world, as a social activity, some kind of development activity. But I actually, what I've done is that I've said, well, let's make it not about development. Let's just realize it's an economic decision, you know, that, you know, ministers of finance, economies should invest as much in child nutrition the same way as they invest in physical infrastructure. So I think first and foremost is knowledge. The second part of it is just simply having the political will to drive what needs to be done. And quite frankly, what needs to be done is pretty simple and very, very clear. Improve access to vitamin A, improve access to zinc and iron, you know, and these are the basic things that kids need to have. And one of the things that we are doing right now is we're developing an index, which I'm spearheading, and that index is basically to allow us to rank countries based on the decisions they are making and the impact they are having on cutting back on stunting and malnutrition in Africa. So we will rate these countries and, you know, put some heat behind the politicians to do the right things.
Mm. The world population is closing in on 8 billion people, I believe. I wonder, Akeem, as the human population continues to grow, how will the world be fed? I mean, there is some limit, isn't there? How many humans can our world sustain, even when it is, as you say, all about economics?
Yeah, you know, I always, you know, wonder, you know, I mean, there was a period when, you know, the population of the world was rising so rapidly that a guy called Malthus, Malthusian economics theories, began to say at the time that there was just no way that the world would be able to feed itself. One thing that Malthus forgot about was technology. You know, technology changes everything. You know, take a look at you and I today. We are using mobile phones to stock up stuff in our homes. We are doing e-commerce. Those are things that we never thought about many, many, many years ago. So wherever you have technology and innovation, you can do amazing things. You know, yes, we have 9 billion people to feed by 2050. There's no doubt about it. And we have limited amount of land. But the thing to think about is, where is that limited amount of arable land? That limited amount of arable land left is actually in Africa. Today, 65% of the uncultivated arable land left in the world is in Africa. It's not in the United States, it's not in Europe, it's not in Latin America, and it's not in Asia. It's right here in Africa. And so what we've got to do, and that is why I am pushing very hard in Africa, is that we must raise agricultural productivity significantly in Africa. The yields are still way below the global average. We must make sure agriculture pays, you know, so that farmers can thrive and actually see that great economic activity. We must make sure that we reduce a huge amount of global food losses that we have today. The amount of food losses we have, you know, Mark, in the Ben, in the world, it's enough to feed everyone, you know. So by simply just improving storage systems, making sure we reduce losses in the processing systems and also in the consumer chains themselves, we can actually feed the world. And of course, don't forget what has happened, you know, with regard to the issue of the technologies that we have right there in Africa today to feed the world. That is why the African Development Bank, where I lead, we decided that we have to prioritize five major issues. which we call the high fives. You know, if you and I can give each other high fives in a basketball game, but we're actually giving ourselves high fives for Africa's development. The first and foremost is to light up and power Africa. Make sure that Africa has universal access to electricity. The second one is to make sure Africa feeds itself, that Africa can also feed the world. And the third one is to make sure that we can integrate Africa and have big markets that will allow us to be able to create greater economic opportunities for folks. And the fourth one is to industrialize. At the end of the day, you produce things, you produce agricultural products, you know, chocolates. I'm sure you like chocolates, but believe me, 65% of all the of the chocolates that you actually eat is coming from both Cote d'Ivoire, which is Ivory Coast, and Ghana. And, you know, we have to industrialize and make sure Africa can add value to everything that it produces. And finally, at the end of the day, development is all about people. It will always be about people. The fifth one is to improve the quality of life of the people of Africa. So basically, I believe that to be able to achieve most of the sustainable development goals in Africa, especially in our rural areas, what we've got to do is to make agriculture a thriving business. We've got to change many of these areas from zones of economic misery that they are today to zones of economic prosperity. And that is what I believe is going to help us to even deal with a lot of problems of terrorists that you see today. Terrorists operate in the dark. Terrorists operate where there's high poverty. When you deal with poverty and you make sure that there's electricity everywhere, I think the terrorists will find another job for themselves.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you, Akinwumi Adesina. Before we go, I want to ask you, as the winner of the 2017 World Food Prize, what does it mean to you to be the World Food Prize laureate this year?
Well, it's such a great honor to be awarded the World Food Prize. Of course, you know, the late Dr. Norman Borlaug was a great mentor of mine. You know, he sparked my interest in trying to feed the world. You know, so basically what this does for me is, you know, it validates what I've done all my career. But more than that, it's put wind behind my sail in the yet unfinished job to make sure that we can feed the world. There will not be any rest for me until we get that job done.
Okay, Akin. What a pleasure. Thank you very much. Enjoy your time in Iowa.
Thank you so very much. It's great talking to you, Ben.
Coming up after a short break, the social and political satire of cartoonist Tom Tomorrow. Tom Tomorrow's real name is Dan Perkins. He grew up in Iowa City and created the cartoon This Modern World 25 years ago. Today, it appears regularly in over 80 newspapers across North America. I'll talk with him after this short break. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.